Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football here with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time. If you've got football questions, text them in, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get in some of your questions before we let John go for the day. How's it going, John?
Good. How are you?
We're good. What do you think's going to happen out there in Philadelphia? Apparently, it's been made clear. It's now a final verdict that DeSean Jackson is a bit of an imbecile.
Yeah, a bit. Just a bit. I mean, with the racial slur that he put out today, you can see how mad the organization is. You can see how mad a lot of people are that I don't know if they're going to suspend him or anything else, but at least he's responding in the sense that, you know, they said, you better make some apologies. I know he called rabbis in Philadelphia and doing all that stuff, but it was inexcusable what he did. And, you know, he puts himself at the risk of a suspension. And, of course, any kind of a suspension, if it's upheld, if he challenges it, ends up now taking away the $440,000 guarantee he has in his contract and gives the Eagles the chance, if they wish, to cut him and just decide not to go. Now, he's already received a little bit of a roster bonus, but and it also would weaken their wide receiving core. But this is not good, and it's something that, you know, the league won't do anything. This is a team-oriented thing, and I think the team might consider doing something.
John, what if the defense gets a lot better and Russell Wilson and the Seahawks win a Super Bowl 2 years from now and he's the MVP? Will he expect then to get paid like Patrick Mahomes, you think?
Well, he's not up until 2024, so he's not going to be in a position to get anything there. And my guess would be, if they do anything, it would be, right on that last year, like it seems like it always is. So it'd be sometime in 2023. But what I would anticipate that he would have a chance to top Mahomes. I mean, the interesting part about the Mahomes contract, as massive as it appears, as massive as it is, I mean, this is one that's going to be jumped in about 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, think, for example, that you have, I mean, he's basically signed now for 12 years. Okay, so now he's taken the model of quarterbacks up to $45 million, which was great. But who's the next one that has a chance to do it? I would have to say it would be Dak Prescott on his next contract, certainly Deshaun Watson on his next contract, Russell Wilson on his next contract. They would be the three that would be able to jump the $45 million deal. And the interesting thing, to get the average up there, which is, of course, very flattering, I mean, this is a very team-friendly deal, because when you look at it, it's kind of like a reverse version of Tom Brady, you know, where Brady, after he gets the $18 million a year in 2010 to 2013, was taking discounted deals. Well, the way this works is that his numbers, for the most part, are reasonably flat as far as the cap. They do have the provisions in there to give him a little bit of extra security that they can guarantee his contract 2 years hence for about four times, and they do that on the third day of the league year. So he knows he's going to be set there and have guaranteed contracts. But after about 5, 6 years, it's then down to 1 year in advance, and toward the end, it's year to year as far as the guarantee if he's on the roster, which you know he's going to be on the roster. So I think this was a fair deal, because what it basically did is it gave the Chiefs the ability to try the best they can to keep the deal together. And the one thing that I observed in this was, you know, he doesn't get any more money until the third year of the contract. I mean, the $27.2 million he was scheduled to be paid over the next 2 years is in a different, with the signing bonus, and it was definitely put together, but it's still 27.2 for the next 2 years, and then he starts jumping.
Hey, John, Lee Steinberg's his agent, right?
That is correct.
So what does he get? What's the percentage an agent gets of a deal?
It used to be 5%. I think, wasn't it 5%, Dave, when you were playing? And then it dropped down to 3%, and it could be as low as 2%, based on how the Players Association has kind of taken away. But my guess, it would be 3%.
So 3% of $450 million. What's that, Professor?
That would be, what, 13.5? 100, 135 million? Not bad.
Or 13.5 million? Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
okay,
13.5 million, yeah.
Let's say you're an NFL general manager right now, John, and you had to pay right this minute Dak Prescott and Deshaun Watson. Which one of those two would you give the most to?
Deshaun Watson. He's the better quarterback of the two. I mean, where you look at Prescott, as good as he is, and you can see he's good enough to get you to 10, 11 wins, and I know his wins against replacement number is pretty good, but Watson's a better quarterback. He's taller. He's got the stronger arm. He's got more dynamics. And so Watson's the one because you knew that I'm still thinking that Prescott gets a deal done here in the next week, that he has a chance then to get about $35 million, where Watson's sitting in a position where, you know, he may not have gotten the $40 million, but is in a position to get more than $39 million. And, you know, I think you can see the way that the structure of that Mahomes deal is. In the first 3 years, you know, it's 39.3 on the average. And so that's I'm sure that that's going to be what Watson's going to be shooting for.
Where do you think the salaries? We were talking about this earlier, and Jim was speculating, you know, maybe we're looking a few years down the road where the quarterbacks are looking at $50 million a year, $60 million a year. There's got to be a line somewhere, John, where the salary cap is not going to keep up with that pace of the quarterback pay. So do you think we're reaching that point now where we're looking at the top, or do you think in 4 years we're going to look at this Mahomes deal and say, man, he's a bargain and so-and-so is now making an average of $55 million a year?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, this isn't any different. Because, again, the reason that the average is so high is because he took 3 years down low. I mean, you know, he's making less than $30 million in the first – he's making, $31 million in the first 3 years of his contract. And that's why to make it up, you have to put – you know, you kind of backload it a little bit. And, of course, he did give them, more flexibility. But, you know, basically a quarterback, if you have a team, you know, you need to have the quarterback paid, you know – no more than 15% of the cap. I know that Russell Wilson's contract's a little bit more than that, and certainly right now it's like 16%, but you don't want to go 18, 19%. That's why I think Dak Prescott gets a deal, because if not, you know, his 37.7 cap number next year for being a second-time franchise player would be about 18% of the cap, and you just can't do that. And so you basically take the position, and what's going to end up happening, even though the cap's not going to go up next year and may go down, you know, it's going to be a big jump in 2022. I mean, certainly getting to over $220 million, because now you're starting to talk about the new TV contracts. Next year you're going to be talking about the 17-game schedule. And so 22 is going to have the big bump. But ultimately, if you keep the quarterbacks, not by the average, but by the cap number, you know, around that 15% level, then you're going to be okay.
All right, John, speaking of cap, it sounds like on your show you talked a little bit about the Browns restructuring Olivier Vernon's contract, which is probably going to take him out of the running for Clowney for good, right?
No question about it, yeah. And I think that it's also telling in the sense that, $11 million. Because remember how everybody was talking about they were offering 17, and some thought the 17 offer was still on the table. Well, I think it's safe to say that it wasn't. And because I kept on hearing, I know Jason Lockenflora was the first one to put this out, that he was hearing in the last 3 weeks that the Browns were still offering, but it was down around $12 million a year. It's one-year $12 million deal. He's not going to sign a multi-year deal for half of what he was asking for. So it was like 1 year, $12 million. And so I think that that exerted pressure on Vernon, because now he gets a guaranteed deal, 1 year, $11 million to stay with the Browns, and that kills any chance of Clowney going to the Browns, even though, you know, now they have over $41 million of cap room. But you know, it looks like Cleveland's out, and of course, just to give that update on the Raiders, you know, Mike Mayock's not as adamant about paying Clowney, so they've got an offer, but I'm sure it's less than $9 million, maybe $9 million, maybe $8.5.
John, you don't think he'd sit out the season, do you?
Good.
I mean, what would be the benefit of doing that?
Well, again, it's a different time right now. Because you can see baseball players, basketball players, you'll see some hockey players, yeah. They're opting out because of the virus and everything else. And, you know, with the fact that he's had a microfracture, he's had surgeries, you know, you can say that, I would say he's healthy for the most part, but he still would have probably pre-existing conditions. And so, you know, you take the tact, and I think you take it in two parts, because that's what I thought was so defining about the conversation that he had with Josina Anderson last week, that, it's like, I want to get a deal done before the start of the season. He didn't say training camp. And so if you're him and you're saying, I'm worth $22 million a year, you probably are angling to say, you know what, if I have to play for $8, $9, $10 million bucks, I'm going to wait till August. I'm going to wait till the very last moment to be able to come in because, one, I don't want to risk getting the virus. I don't want to risk injury. I don't want to do this. And so, I mean, he could set out the season, and there will be some players, I think, that will do it. But at this stage, you know, I think that he may be more of an August signing late than he is going to be a pre-camp signing. But, again, what it does, it creates the inevitable thing that, okay, so who is left for Clowney? You got Tennessee. Tennessee paid Vic Beasley, a linebacker, $9.5 million, so you figure that they're not going to pay more than $9.5 million. And then you've got Seattle, who's you know started at $13, $14 million, and then ended up getting up at one point to $16 million. You know, maybe they can be able to get him at $10 million. Remember, they paid him, what, $8 million last year because $7 million was paid by the Houston Texans.
Yeah, that worked out well. Houston Texans, still not sure what they're thinking. But, John, and again, if you've got questions for John, you can text him in to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. The 360 wants to know, is there a new update? What's the latest update on Will Dissly?
Seems to be fine. I mean, he's still coming along off the Achilles surgery, and you know he had it, I think, early enough that you know I don't know if he's going to be. He might be ready for the start of training camp. He may not. Certainly, they're going to be very cautious about it. But so far, so good as far as Dissly.
All right, John. I'm looking at Allegiant Stadium in Vegas, the new stadium down there. Have we heard any progress? Because I remember, John, during the preseason last year, Brian O'Connell, who is our executive producer, going, man, I sure don't want to be the first one in there. Because, you know, usually stadiums have lots of kinks that they have to work out and things like that. But what do you hear as far as progress goes on their stadium down there?
It's going to be tight. But, you know, I guess the one thing that at least helps Brian out, and I think everybody else, is that's the first preseason game, and it's most likely not going to be played. If there is going to be any preseason games played, because you know the thought is they're going to eliminate 1-4, and there's going to have to be some adjustments because you got to make sure if you're going to have two preseason games, you have a home and an away game. Players Association basically, I think, is going to win this battle that they don't think there's going to be any preseason games. So that buys a little bit more time, but it's getting tight. I mean, very tight.
By the way. Yeah, I was going to say, John, really quick, I'm looking at video inside. Remember they used to light that hokey little torch, and it was like they were up in the corner, and it was just like this little tiny, I see this metal one that they've gotten. It's a lot bigger anyway, so that part will be better. But I always thought that was so weird that somebody would stand there holding this little tiny flame out in the end zone when they'd start their games. It was kind of like their version of the 12th man flag, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very different, but it's going to be interesting to see how they change because, I mean, they have such avid fans that you know be in the parking lot for the pregame and do the tailgating and all that fun stuff. But it's going to be interesting to see how they change that around.
Quentin Dunbar has added a second lawyer to his criminal defense team from the incident down there in Florida, John. The longer this goes and with this news today, does that lead you to believe that he might not be playing for the Seahawks this year?
Hard to tell because, you know, you can look at the situation that was there with Michael Kendricks. And, you know, Kendricks still hasn't gotten his sentencing yet. And so, you know, the courts are all backed up. We all understand that. And so, you know, now the league would have to make a determination both on he and DeAndre Baker because now it looks like, you know, they'll have to make a decision whether they're going to be allowed to be there or they have to be on the exempt list or anything of that nature. So, but, you know, the fact that he hired an extra lawyer and lawyering up now tells you that this is going to take more time and it's not going to be probably there for the start of training camp.
John, I'm seeing this story here that the NFL Players Association has informed its board of player reps that the league wants to place 35% of player salaries in escrow in order to help manage costs during the 2020 season. How do you think they're going to feel about that?
What you're seeing, this is not like baseball, and certainly it's not as good as basketball in the NBA, but what you're seeing is that there's a lot of negotiation just to get this thing done. Like, for example, for revenue, the owners want, you know, the two preseason games and also want to have the ability to see, okay, if we don't have the preseason games, you know, what we can do. But also want to have, you know, test runs for road games and home games where the players are saying, hey, it's like, why should we risk our bodies both with injuries? Because injuries are going to be massive this year with no offseason programs. I mean, they're saying that the hamstring injuries back in 2011 were up 40%. It was 50% or 100% increase as far as Achilles tendon tears. And so it's like, why risk it when you want to try to make sure that you want to get everybody ready for their games that count? And so, players said no to coming in a week before camp with some rookies and quarterbacks and things of that nature. So this is just a swap. And sometime this week, they'll get everything done. They did have the cooperation on getting some more things done today, as far as the protocols. I mean, they're still going back and forth as far as masks or mandatory mask or no mask, but this is all in negotiations. But, it's not negative, but, don't overread it because they'll get something done.
Hey, I saw Mahomes said that he will be staying off jet ski and basketball courts.
That's encouraging.
And he says, I don't think I'm allowed to play basketball. I'm sure baseball's not going to be allowed as well. There's lots of things that they're prohibited from doing. But, he said, I'm going to be sticking to football and video games for a while now. But, man, I used to get in good shape playing and, like, pick up basketball games. Do most guys have that or only the ones with that many zeros on it in their contracts that they can't play, basketball and ride a jet ski and whatnot?
Yeah, I'm sure the bigger the contract, the more restrictions that are there because you certainly, can't lose a quarterback to something that's not right. And so, yeah, I'll have to think that's going to be something that's got to be in consideration. But overall, I think, let's put it this way, Mahomes is one of the best guys you could ever be. And he's a good family man, a good person and all that stuff. And, he'll be cautious because he realized there's so much on the line.
John, I like this story out of Pittsburgh. James Conner, he bought a truck for his dad last year, and he bought a new home for his mom recently this week. I'll bet that he's well-liked in Pittsburgh, having played there at Pittsburgh and being a Steelers running back. So what's the word on Conner?
Oh, he's a good guy. I mean, the way he was able to fight cancer, the players like him a lot. I mean, so he's had some injury issues and all that stuff, but he's very, very popular. And, of course, what's going to be interesting to see is that he, like nine other guys, including Chris Carson, are running backs from that draft 2017 whose contracts are up. And my guess is, I think he'll give them a team friendly type of deal. He's not going to be asking for the, the big money or anything like that. But, it's now up to the Steelers to find a way to re-sign him.
Hey, John, is there an official set of expectations when it comes to fans for the NFL season? I was getting confused between baseball and football. I knew one of the leagues was going to allow a certain amount of fans or try to allow a certain amount of fans, depending on what was happening in that particular state. Is there a blanket policy in place right now?
No, NFL has basically taken the position that there is no blanket policy. It has to be between the team and the city or county or state that they are in. And so it's all going to be worked out locally as opposed to nationally because they realize, you're going to have some teams that have the ability to do it. You have other teams, like, for example, it's already got a roadblock in Buffalo. Buffalo's basically said nobody in the stands. And so, no, it's an individual thing, not a league thing.
All right, John. With the Seahawks, offensive line, we talked a little bit about that, and it's just going to be difficult, I feel like, for Mike Solari. How well respected is Mike Solari around the league? Because I talked to Howard Mudd about him, and he just loves him, thinks that he's one of the best, but he's probably going to be the one coach with the spotlight on him this year because, that's a pretty raw group there. Or not raw, but, everybody's new, coming in from different places. And probably at the end of the year, we're going to know whether or not he was able to get that done.
Yeah, no, he's probably, he's not number one because then you're looking at Mike Munchak and a couple guys like that. But he's certainly got to be in the top five, six, or seven, because he's well-respected. He's done well. In all the places that he's been, I know his one stay in the Giants wasn't that good, but it wasn't his fault. He didn't have any talent to be able to work with. That's on the Giants front office. But no, he's really well respected, and you can see how good he is now. And I think this could be a group that could, it's going to take a while because they haven't had an off season together and haven't done anything together yet. But I think that he likes big. He likes to, get the running going, and he what a meticulous type of guy he is as far as working all the techniques. So he's a good one.
Bruce Arians, you see his comments today, John? He said the players are all going to get sick. It's just a matter of how sick they're going to get. Do you agree with him? Is that going to be the case?
No.
Yeah, I hope not too.
Yeah, that's one where it's like Bruce, don't be saying those things, because remember, you're in that age group where you're going to be in question for being on the field. So it's like, come on, you know, don't wish for anything. And again, that I still warn everybody, once we get to the 28th, and unless some of the players start to come in before the 28th, with right now it's no. I mean, watch the number of positive tests, because it's going to be, if it's just 5%, you're still talking 150 players. That's just got to be realized. But let's hope the numbers are low, and let's kind of take those comments away, Bruce.
You wouldn't expect to see any coaches opt out, right? Because you talk about age group. He's there. Obviously, Pete is there. Bill Belichick. You've got a couple of others. Have we heard anything about any coaches with apprehension about the season?
Not yet, but we will. I mean, you saw that Scott Servais took three coaches who were either older or had a pre-existing position, and have them working in a different area or a different part of the team. And I'm sure that is going to be some things that they have to look at, because, you know, what you don't want to have is an older coach or a coach with a pre-existing condition to get something that could knock them out. So that's still too early to be determined. I mean, coaches are all filtering back this week, and I'm sure now they'll start to think about that and see if, you know, what older coaches, you know, can do it. But again, the head coaches, they're all planning on being there.
That's much, much, much more important for over 70, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Certainly way more of a risk than there is for the players. But you talked a little bit about today who's under with Sean Salisbury. I was listening. More pressure to win in New England, Bill Belichick or Cam Newton? I think that's a great question.
Yeah.
And I think it's Bill Belichick.
I do too.
I don't really expect that much from Cam Newton. He's coming off an injury. So, but, you know, I'm very interested to see how that plays out. You think it's the pressure's on Belichick?
Yeah, because, I mean, Tom Brady, you would anticipate, is going to add at least two wins to the Bucs. That gets him to at least 9 and puts him in position for a wild card. But, I mean, you know, whatever he does is on a team that hasn't been to the playoffs in 9 consecutive years. So it's like anything that he does is a bonus, and all the expectation for the Patriots is that, okay, they lose 4 key players on defense. You know, they lose Tom Brady. They're right against the cap right now. So there's a lot of things working against them, and they haven't upgraded their wide receiver position. So, it was going to be more of a challenge, but I think the Cam Newton gift, and I call it a gift because, you know, to get a former MVP for $1.75 million is remarkable, and it does give them a chance to change into a running team that Bill Belichick wants. It's funny because, you know, everybody continues to keep talking about, you know, let Russell cook. Well, guess what? You know, if they go with the running game, it's going to be very much exactly like you see here in Seattle. It'll maybe some different formations because they'll go 2 back, 2 tight end. But, they'll change from a Tom Brady passing team to a Bill Belichick running team.
John, we appreciate it. As always, we'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. The Professor John Clayton with us every day. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. We'll talk with young Mariners outfielder Jake Fraley. See how summer camp is shaping up for him. He's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We're looking forward to the beginning of the baseball season as much as anybody, but maybe not quite as much as our next guest, who is, I'm sure, eager to get out there and swing a bat, catch a ball, just some sense of normalcy. Jake Fraley of your Seattle Mariners is our guest here. Jake, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
We're doing really good. I just want to get your thoughts on a few different things, but more importantly, what did you do during the shutdown here, where normally you'd be playing spring training games and honing your skills? Everybody's on lockdown. Did you have access to batting cages? Were you playing catch? What was happening in terms of baseball for you?
Yeah, the majority of us, obviously I can only really speak for myself, but just, you know, from the guys that I know and spoke to, everyone was pretty much in the same situation where, you know, everything was shut down. You know, we were in a pandemic. I mean, we still are. But with the quarantine and all that, you know, we couldn't go to gyms. there weren't cages open, so you kind of had to make the best of, you know, what you could get your hands on and what you had at your house. So that's what we did. We actually ended up staying out in Arizona, so we had a nice little setup out there, had a nice big garage, so we were able to get our hands on a couple different things equipment-wise, and the Mariners helped us out with that as well. And then from a hitting standpoint, just hitting off the tee, and really through that time, DePoto really made sure that we understood that from the baseball activity side, it wasn't necessarily a huge kind of necessity to worry about, because obviously we knew this was going to probably end up being a long process and long thing that was going to go on with the virus, as an assumption with how bad things were at that time. And so it was a lot of just trying to stay in the best shape we could and kind of utilize, like I said, what we can get our hands on and what we had at our house.
Hey, Jake, it sounds like you're definitely a family guy, like bringing your kids around, and I guess that's going to change this year, but I'll bet having those young ones around has kept you sane, right, have it during this whole lockdown.
No, it definitely has. I think my son misses baseball more than I did. He's missing going to the ballpark. They're both, especially my son, he's three. Has a good understanding of everything going on around him at this age and, you know, remembering a lot of things. So, you know, this has kind of hit him hard in the sense because, he's used to going to the ball field every single day, you know, every year during baseball season to go watch Papa. So, you know, that's been a little bit of a difficult thing having to explain that to him over and over and over again because he doesn't really fully, you know, wrap his mind around what's actually going on. And but man, they're keeping me going. That's for sure. I don't have to worry about my cardio. They make sure they take care of that.
Hey Jake, I'm guessing your life flashed before your very eyes today. I'm looking at a picture on Ryan Divish's Twitter timeline where you're talking to the trainer. You took a fastball off your helmet. It was a glancing blow, but still, Gerson Batista was the guy who threw it. That guy throws 100 mile an hour fastballs. I mean, what was that like today for you?
Yeah, that was a tough one. It's baseball. We all understand, you know, things happen sometimes, and unfortunately that ended up happening today. He hit me pretty square, and, you know, the good Lord had his hand on me, and I was fortunate to be okay, and I went through the whole concussion protocol, passed everything, and still feel fine. So everything ended up working out with that, and like I said, I had the good Lord looking out for me.
Well, and look at you, you still had it in you to come and talk to us. So that you're just a tough guy out there. You're nothing stopping you, man. So we definitely appreciate that. Hey, I want to take you back to when you came here to Seattle. Obviously, you come in the way of a trade. Mike Zunino and Guillermo Heredia head out to Tampa. You come over here with Malik Smith. What was that like? I always wonder for young guys that haven't really gotten their first chance at the league. They're not veterans yet. Is it jarring? Do you kind of just figure, man, I'm a Tampa Bay Ray for life, and I can't wait to be out there? Is it what is that feeling to know you've been traded?
Yeah, it's a really weird thing. I think if anybody tells you different, for one, especially for me, you know, I'm still. I haven't played professional ball that long. I was just drafted in 16, and quite honestly, I haven't played that much either. Like I said, I was drafted in 16, had little short season, 2 months right after you get drafted that everybody goes through. And 17, I played about 20 games and ended up getting plunked in the knee with some beef that went back and forth between us and another team. I ended up missing that entire year after those first 20 games, so really didn't play 17. And then ended up playing 18 and then got traded, and then obviously last year here at Seattle in 19. Especially being that early in my career and still being early in my, you know, professional career, you know, you envision yourself, you know, getting to the big leagues at that team that drafts you. Of course, everybody does. And so for me, I just obviously didn't know that was going to entail me being in the visiting dugout when I got there. I thought it was going to be in the home dugout with Tampa. So it was a very unique thing, man. It was obviously such a blessing to be able to do that, you know, against the team that drafted me. But, it's been a blessing to be able to come over here to Seattle. Everybody over here is awesome. Unbelievable coaches, unbelievable staff to be able to, you know, get me to have the opportunity, you know, last year and then obviously going into this year and going forward, being in the big leagues, and looking forward to many, many years here.
Jake, somebody told me that Louisiana is to baseball what Texas is to football. And you went to LSU and drafted out of there. Did you know going in that you were going to play pro baseball? When did you figure that out? Was it at LSU or before that?
It was before that. I actually didn't want anything to do with college coming out of high school. I was fortunate enough to, you know, have the right people around me to get me to a point when I was young like that in high school, to where, you know, I had a handful of scouts that were highly interested in me out of high school. And, you know, I ended up committing to LSU my sophomore year of high school and really didn't have any anticipation on going to college. And as I got to my senior year, kind of, you know, a lot of praying, a lot of talking to people around me that, you know, I've had the ability through baseball to kind of reach and have gone through and being in those shoes. And I kind of came to the conclusion that I didn't really want pro ball. So I knew I was going to end up playing pro ball, but obviously, like I said, you know, I anticipated that being right out of high school, but then ended up changing my mind and honoring my commitment to LSU. And so I sent out a letter to all 30 clubs and letting them know, like, don't bother drafting me. It was kind of like a boundary for me to make sure I wasn't swayed by any money. And ended up just, you know, like I said, honoring that commitment and ended up being the best decision I ever made. Going to LSU and being able to experience those 3 years and develop as a player. I learned so much under Paul Menei there. It was unbelievable and an absolute blessing. And, you know, it's a huge reason of why I'm at where I'm at now and the player that I am today.
Hey, Jake, the last thing I have for you, like Dave, I watched the interview you had with Shannon Dreher, and I appreciated when you said that you love pizza and you love chocolate chip cookies and that you could eat 8 or 10 of them at a time. And I was thinking, man, I have the same issues with food. Jake, I was at Dairy Queen over in the Tri-Cities, and I had a half-pound flamethrower, and I had a large Blizzard, the animal cookie Blizzard. Jake, you got to try that sometime. But that's my prelude to what I really want to ask you about. You're a pescatarian now, it sounds like. And you know, I thought maybe that had something to do with astrology, but it's actually, what is that? You're just eating fish and vegetables? Is that what's happening now?
Yeah, so I actually have gotten off of that a little bit since that interview with Shannon in spring training. I did that all through the off season and all through spring training. And, you know, me and my nutritionist, talked through it and understood that it was something I was going to do for, a handful of months. And then eventually, you know, you're going to go through stages where you're going to kind of work meat a little bit back in and then go back to the full pescatarian diet. So right now I'm in that stage where I'm working in some meat and stuff here. Me and my wife are not big red meat people, so it's a lot of chicken and the occasional red meat. But the pescatarian side of it is strictly, you know, the only animal-based protein is obviously fish. Otherwise, everything else is plant except for the fish, the egg, and cheese. Otherwise, everything's plant-based. And so those three animal-based products, like I said, with the fish, the eggs, and the cheese, and otherwise everything's plant. Don't drink any other than the cheese with that dairy is almond milk. So don't drink any cow milk. It's unbelievable. I could see a huge difference in the way that I felt, the way my body felt, the way I felt out on the field, having more energy, being able to recover faster. It's a huge difference.
Jake Fraley of your Seattle Mariners has been our guest here with Bob, Dave, and more. Jake, thanks so much for taking time with us. We wish you the best of luck. Thank goodness you're healthy after what took place today, and we can't wait to see you out there on the field.
Definitely. I appreciate it, guys. God bless you all, and have a great day.
You too. There you go. Jake Fraley of your Seattle Mariners. A reminder, you do have radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, just tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and it becomes a radio right there. Well, Adam Schefter actually wasn't the first to report the Mahomes deal. So who was it? We'll find out more about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the Dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
This is my first Zoom call, so I'll have to, I guess.
You'll become a
fan or something. Or I can't play North Carolina. I don't have internet, so I couldn't download anything, so I don't have any way of doing that. So
stop
this
it.
I don't have that excuse up here.
That's the voice of Kyle Seager saying he's got no internet. How does that happen these days? That's like not having television. That's like...
I envy him.
Does he have indoor plumbing? What's going on?
Yeah.
No internet.
I'm
stunned.
I'm with DJ. What would life be like? You know? I mean, everything is in your... Yeah, I mean, everything is right in your face and... That's where, like, I was just chatting with a doctor friend of mine, and he kind of said, you know, what you said, Jim, about, like, one is too many. What if it's your son that dies from the coronavirus, even if it's only one? And, but now it used to be like a stat in the paper when we were growing up, and now there's a face to it. There's an Instagram page. There's a Twitter. There's all this stuff. I saw one today on the air. And so it just changed how we view the world so much. And my point more than anything is, what do you think your life would be like if you went 3 months without the internet, without news, without really knowing what's going on in the world?
Blissfully unaware.
Would that be such a bad thing? Yeah, I mean, I don't think you have a responsibility to everybody around you to be aware of every single thing that's going on right now. And if you didn't, I think you would be a lot happier person.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate what Kyle Seager had to say about not having internet in his home in North Carolina. You kind of go, yeah, that's weird. But at the same time, like today, I took off this morning and I forgot my phone. And the first minute or two, you're going, oh, what am I going to do without my phone? And after that, it's nice. It's nice not having your phone, yeah. Not being bothered. And we were over in the Tri-Cities this weekend. My kids were playing a couple of games in Pasco. And on the way home, the kids, and they had one of their buddies with them too, and we were all running out of juice on our phones. And guess what happened? We had to talk to each other. So wow. I mean, it was just kind of nice.
How about this one from Pat Mahomes' negotiation yesterday? It wasn't Adam Schefter who broke the news. It wasn't, you know, Ian Rappaport. It wasn't, you know, any of those guys who we come to expect to break the news of Pat Mahomes' big contract. No, no. It was one Katie Camlin, and you're asking, who's that? She is a liquor store employee in the city of Kansas City, and how she found out about Pat Mahomes' signing is a member of the Chiefs' front office came in and purchased 6 bottles of Dom Perignon, and he said that there is a big signing today. He told this to the liquor store employee. She then asked if it was Chris Jones getting a contract extension. He said no, and then left it at that. So she then implied that it's probably a Pat Mahomes deal, and sure enough, it was Pat Mahomes' mega contract extension.
How about that? Adam Schefter. He got scooped by a liquor store clerk. Take that, Stretch. I like it.
Yeah, you don't like Schefter, do you?
He hasn't been particularly friendly the past couple times I've spoken with him.
Yeah, I remember he said something like, "I didn't say that," or something to you.
Yeah, but, he was kind of a yeah.
He's always been really nice, good dude to me. Anyway, I mean, he was a beat writer in Denver. Yeah, so I don't know what happened that day. But anyway, yeah, this is pretty funny. Did she really get the scoop, though? I mean, she said, okay, sounds like something's
going to
happen.
I guess she tweeted it out.
She didn't have the numbers.
Well, she didn't have that. I think she tweeted it out, and then she said she got uncomfortable with it and deleted the tweet, but people screen-capped it or whatever, and then she started getting all the praise and credit after it became official, so...
I like her thing where she's like, hey, come on down here and buy some beer from me.
Yeah.
How about you do that?
Yeah, holy bleep, I beat Schefter. Ha, ha, ha. She has a pinned tweet there. She's got 4,600 followers on Twitter. And yeah, good for her. She says she's an accidental NFL insider, sci-fi enthusiast, and mega nerd. She loves the Chiefs and horror games. So, yeah, good for Katie. I like that one. I thought about you, Bob. And, yeah, scooping Schefter, that's pretty good.
The guy was videoing me for a minute after a shot, like a full minute. That's just, you know, obsessive. I mean, it's not the cameraman's, it's somebody's fault. It's just, you know, there's got to be a little respect. That's all. I understand it's his job. Absolutely. I'm not saying he didn't do his job. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if he videos you for a minute after you hit a shot, trying to get you to capture something where you could potentially get mad, no, that's ridiculous. I wasn't going to get mad anyway. It was just like he was trying to catch me. I just trying to protect the tour. I'm trying to protect all the players on the tour. That's all I'm trying to do.
I'm going to quote the great Dave Wyman speaking to Philadelphia Eagle fans. Oh, shut up. Are you serious? What a whiny little brat. Give me a break, man. You're in the lead. You are a story. The camera's going to be on you with good shots and bad shots. If you were in the back of the pack, I'm guessing the camera wouldn't have been there. So, protect the tour. Is it in danger from cameramen? Oh, my goodness, Bryson. By the way, that's Bryson DeChambeau, for people wondering who that was. But what a whining little crybaby.
Why, he should have let that one go. I mean, I was speculating about, yeah, I'd get angry if somebody shoved a camera in my face after I missed a tackle down on the field. But, you know, my dad used to always say, when you respond that much to someone, you let them win. And so, like, he's letting, and he's making it worse for himself. And I don't even think, Jim, you know golf better than anybody. Did the PGA Tour, I mean, have you ever heard of anything like this before? I've never. It's one thing, he says it the first day, and if it just comes out of anger, but he had a day to think about it, and he doubles down on it.
Yeah, that's brutal. Yeah, you know, guys like Pat Perez, they get mad on occasion, and, you know, guys trying to control their temper on tour. But I like that DeChambeau is being a whiner. And, you know, Patrick Reed.
Like a good whiner.
Well, let me explain why. Because you look at golf, and if you're just a casual observer, you're thinking, oh, man, those guys are dullards. They're boring. Why would you watch that? Well, they need a little, you know, snap. They need a little snap to it. And so Bryson DeChambeau, not only with his doubling down on getting mad at the camera guy, but, you know, he's controversial right now because he's bulked up. He's hitting his drives 350. He's the Masters favorite. And so I imagine that there's some guys on tour that maybe don't like him too much. He's been accused of slow play in the past. And, yeah, I think it's kind of fun because, like, Patrick Reed is the bad boy the guys don't like out there right now. But maybe DeChambeau is closing in on Patrick Reed. It's fun. It makes the tour more interesting.
I don't find him that compelling. If he were talking smack to other players, then I'd be interested. Some guy whining about a camera being on him, I don't find that compelling. But
well, don't you think you'd be watching him a little more than you would have in the past, especially after hearing that he's bulked up and he's hitting at 350 and he's just overpowering golf courses right now, and it might be a wave of the future?
No.
I tried, Bob.
Maybe they should test him for steroids.
Yeah, everybody
sounds
got
like
all...
He's having roid rage right now.
Well, everybody accused Tiger of that when he was, you know, when they were having the Tiger-proof courses because he was blasting the ball. Everybody was implying that he was doing steroids. So, yeah, let DeChambeau go under that same level of scrutiny. It is Tuesday. You know what that means. Every Tuesday at 5 o'clock, we bring in the one, the only, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, coming up next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.